Jennifer Coe is a violinist who has spent a large part of her professional career commissioning and promoting new music to perform and record. That's not to say she has neglected the classical music canon, having recorded everything from Bach solo violin music to Tchaikovsky's violin concerto, but she usually pairs the more traditional works with new compositions meant to complement the older works, as if to say, of course we all love Bach, but here's something that a composer today is doing that's similar, and it's pretty interesting. And beautiful in its own way. She's one third of a trio of women headlining this weekend's concerts of the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. Karina Kanellakis, winner of the 2016 George Schulte Award, is the conductor, and the program features a violin concerto by one of today's most respected woman composers, Kaija Saariaho. Jennifer Coe has worked closely with Saariaho for some time now. When she stopped by for a visit, I asked her how that all began.
The first time I heard Kaija Saariaho's music was her opera, actually, L'Amour de Loin, Love from Afar. And it just completely, it was just so moving to me. And I then kind of did the deep dive into all of her music and saw that she had written a violin concerto and started, it took me several years until I could find a place that would let me play the concerto. But it was really a pleasure. I got to work with LA Philharmonic, with Graal Theatre for the first time. And I've had a really long relationship with that piece. I think the first time I played it was in 2007. And since then, I've recorded it, actually, with Curtis Institute of Music, their orchestra, which is where I went to school. Mm-hmm. And that's right. Also, I went to school with Karina Kanellakis there, and also with Zachary Depew. So we were all violin students at the time.
Sort of a reunion then with Zach Depew.
Yeah, coming back to and town. Then also your principal viola at Indianapolis Symphony, Eugene. Karina and I were at Marlborough Music Festival with Eugene. So it's just, the music world is very small, which makes it really nice, actually. I'm so happy to see everybody.
I am curious about how the playing of previous generations of violinists would inform your playing. So, for example, Saariaho was thinking of Gidon Kremer as she wrote this music. How do you assess his playing? Or do you find something about his playing that affects how you approach this music? Or
at this point, really not, I have to say. At this point, I do know Kaija quite well personally, and we've worked together, and she's written quite a few pieces for me at this point. So I really feel that I have come to an understanding of what I believe her music says, and that's just the way I kind of play it, I guess. But that's how one approaches, whether it's Beethoven concerto or Bach sonatas and partitas or Mozart. You just find what you believe in the music to be true, and then you just access it in that way. And what I've found with working with a lot of living composers is that that's actually what they want.
You have actually interviewed quite a few composers for this project called Shared Madness, which involves not just the interviews, but performances as well. Mm-hmm. And in your conversation with Kaija Saariaho, she mentioned these things you can do technically on the violin that it sounds like she tried to stay away from because it just seemed like showmanship. You think I'm interpreting that correctly, or?
Well, I think anybody really knows me very well as a musician. I think Kaija has heard me perform maybe even more than any other individual, and she's heard me really perform everything ranging from Bach to Beethoven to Mozart to Sibelius concerto to everything. And one of the things that's interesting is that we think about music very similarly. And I think that a lot of people can see that when you're in the role of soloist, you do a lot of virtuosic things, I guess technically. But I know that what she values in me is something different, actually.
I want to get on the topic of some other projects that you've done. They span multiple seasons. The one, of course, is Shared Madness, but more recently, there's Limitless on stage together. Mm-hmm. Now, these involve performances, I would assume, over a series of weeks or months, and I'm wondering, is it hard to sell a venue on a concept like this?
Actually, that was two concerts. There are 9 composers. And that was so fun. And we sold out both shows. So
well,
that was
there you
hard.
Go. Question answered. Yeah, question answered.
It was such a great experience. It's really about obliterating that line between composers and performers. Because in the past, that was really, you know, Mozart was an actual performer, instrumentalist, as was Beethoven. Mahler, of course, was a conductor. So there was a very close association with performing as well as composing. So all of the pieces in Limitless are actually duos with myself and the composer performing. And it's also an extension of this larger project that I'm doing called the New American Concerto Project, in which I really wanted to reflect what America looks like today. And a lot of that is that, you know, 50% of our population is female. And I really, truly believe that women have something to say as well. So Limitless was majority women composers. But to be honest, I just chose the best composers that could be chosen. I mean, that's what I believe. But I also made the effort to think about, was I really, when I curated those two concerts and put together the project for commissions, were we really reflecting America today?
It's a real dilemma, isn't it? To say, well, it is important to get women composers and performers involved and yet not have a quota system, not have some sort of just basic or.
I do think back on, there's a quote from Justice Ginsburg in the Supreme Court, and somebody asked her, when will there be enough female justices on the court? And I think she said, well, considering the fact that for over 100 years, it's been only male judges, she was like, you know, it would make sense if it's all female, and that would be the right quota. Now, do I think that quotas are important? No, but I do think that in the arts, especially in classical music, it was a tradition that was started in Western Europe, and because of the society and the historical time in which it was set, the majority of people that we do remember are white males, right? And what's interesting actually is that if you historically look back upon that, you actually see that women were a huge part of performing society during the time of Mozart and of Beethoven. And they've just kind of been written out of history. And there was also Chevalier, I believe, in Paris in a court, George Bridgetower, for whom Beethoven wrote the Kreutzer Sonata. And I think they had a falling out over a woman, and then therefore Beethoven rededicated it to Kreutzer, who actually never played the piece. And it was unusual because Beethoven premiered it with Bridgetower, and Bridgetower was of African origin. So there are a lot of intersections that do exist, but we've kind of ignored them historically in classical music. But I definitely feel like right now is a time that is important to be inclusive.
Orchestras, for the most part, tend to go toward these powerhouse composers and powerhouse works every season, war horses, so to speak. Contemporary composers seem to get short shrift. Do you think that's true, or?
I think that people go to music for different reasons. I think for some people, it's comforting, it's familiar, it's nostalgic. I think for other people, and this is not talking just about classical music, I think other people, if you're talking about pop music or if you're talking about other forms of music, people are really excited about the next album that the artist is putting out. So there's a part of me that doesn't, or actually, I don't really see genre in the sense that I just see the world as good musicians and bad musicians and good music and bad music. And I do wonder how we don't have that same viewpoint within the classical music industry, because it is very exciting to hear a new work and to see our society reflected in that work. And I can say, because I've done a lot of music education, that when I go into schools, kids have a much easier time listening to something that's contemporary because it is of the musical language that they've grown up with, that they've heard in the world. And then you can bring them back, actually, historically, to something like Bach. But I will totally start with something like Sarajevo or Julia Wolf or Missy Mazzoli or Philip Glass, and then work backwards in time to Bach. And then, but I've noticed in classrooms, if I start with Bach, it's harder for them to access that.
So what is it about, for example, Missy Mazzoli that appeals to a child? What is it about that musical language that they find familiar?
Because it's just a reflection of all of the musical language out there. I think we're just influenced, artists and just human beings, we're all influenced by what's happening in the world today, and whether that's you're at the grocery store and you're picking up something or and you hear something over the loudspeakers or if you're in an elevator or, you know, pop culture and songs are just out there. And that musical language is just part of the fabric of our lives. Or even, I don't really personally watch TV, but I would imagine in like advertisements and stuff, there's a certain kind of musical language that's happening. I could certainly say in film, and movies and things like that. But yeah, that kind of musical language is present. I mean, all of us are musicians. We all have action. We all make music, even in the cadences of our voice when we speak. So in that sense, I think we're all musicians.
Your comment earlier about there just being good music and bad music, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, contemporary music, which is good.
The genre of like hip hop or jazz or, you know.
Well, it made me think of your most recent recording as opposed to a lot of your discography. I mean, I think contemporary music is well represented in the recordings you've made with Sadi. Mm-hmm. But this most recent one is Tchaikovsky. And, you know, such a story behind this as well. I would love it if you could explain perhaps this nostalgic touch to this particular recording you made.
I kind of personally think of it as a circular process. I started my career in a way because I won the Tchaikovsky competition. And I then, maybe 5 years ago at this point, worked again with the conductor who conducted me at the Tchaikovsky competition. And we were like, oh my God, we still really sync together musically. This is amazing. So we decided to do all the complete works for violin and orchestra by Tchaikovsky. And in a strange way, I see it as a companion disc to what I'm about to release next November, which is an all Kaija Saariaho CD. So I kind of see it as a pair because they're both quite circular in the sense of there's a sense of return. Yeah. So I actually think they're the perfect pairing.
Boy, I want the bookcase edition. You know, we could have one on one end and the other on the other and all your recordings in between. Well, Jennifer Koh, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today.
Thank you.
Violinist Jennifer Koh performs with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra this weekend. She's the soloist in the Graal Theater Concerto by Kaija Saariaho. The program also features Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony and Rond de Printemps by Debussy. There's more information at indianapolissymphony.org.